Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice. Today, my very special guest is Curtis Morrison. He is an immigration attorney and a Democrat who is running against Congressman Daryl Issa, a Republican, in the 48th Congressional District. 2026 will be a pivotal election year, since Republicans hold a very slim majority in the House and the Senate right now. So if Democrats regain control of one or both houses, they will have the power to rein in many of the Trump administration's controversial actions. Curtis Morrison has started two law firms, and he's previously worked as a realtor and a substitute teacher, among other things. He has also filed as an intervener in a lawsuit that Daryl Issa brought against the state of California, seeking to prohibit California and other states from counting mail-in ballots received after Election Day. So we have a lot to talk about. Curtis, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I appreciate you having me. And I'm just so impressed with, wow, you've done your homework.
Well, you've got an interesting site there. So why don't you start by telling me, what is it that prompted you to run for Congress?
Okay, so interesting story. I've not been happy having Daryl Issa as my congressional representative. I pay attention to what's going on with the federal government. I pay attention to what happens in Congress. It's very much impacts the work that I do as an immigration attorney. And I started to notice that Daryl Issa has become like the biggest cheerleader for Trump, you know, out there with the pom-poms for everything Trump does. And it's such a contrast to how he got elected and what he was doing for this district. He got elected saying originally, like, he went into Congress to be a watchdog.
Yeah.
I'm going to hold the executive accountable. It was the name of his book. And now he sponsored a bill to put Trump's picture on money.
Yeah, I mean, he also sponsored one to nominate Trump for the Nobel Peace Prize, among other things. You have said that he's become not a watchdog, but a lapdog under the Trump administration. I wonder if you can share a few of your specific concerns. We'll get to immigration in a minute, but first I wanted to ask you about the voting lawsuit that Issa has filed against California. Can you tell us a little bit about that suit and the status of it? I know you've got some other groups that have joined you on it. What do you want our listeners to know?
Right. So ISIS attorneys in that, they're this NGO called Judicial Watch, who basically go across the country with this agenda of voter suppression, trying to limit the number of votes that are counted. Mm-hmm. And they've actually, with the lawsuit they're filing in California, they have had success in one state, in Mississippi, and the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals has upheld that success. So now in Mississippi, you mail your ballot a couple days before the election, but it arrives the day after election. It's not counted.
Very troubling, especially in a city like San Diego, a county like San Diego, where we get a lot of military ballots that are coming from overseas, as well as, you know, the rest of us that mail the ballot in, and we're sort of at the whim of the post office as far as how long it takes to get there. So currently in
exactly.
California, you know, you can count the ballots up to a week after the election. This would basically give no grace period. They would all have to be counted by election day at the same time they're trying to count everybody who actually showed up at the polls to vote. So quite troubling. So what are the grounds on which you're challenging this, and what groups have joined you as interveners?
Right. So Daryl Issa is officially the plaintiff right now. And Shirley Weber, the California Secretary of State, is the first defendant. And so the California Department of Justice will put up a defense, and I believe a rigorous defense against this. However, I think that I could bring to this case, I have a particular standing and injury that the California Secretary of State might not be able to put forth an address. So that's why I'm intervening as a party, not only as a voter, but also as a candidate.
You're concerned that your own votes, not just presidential votes, but that your own votes might not get counted if they come in late.
Correct. And also, if you read the complaint, Daryl Issa is alleging that this is going to cause him injury if these votes are counted. I mean, and he cites other elections where Republicans have lost because votes were counted. And I want to be able to go into the tribunal, go and tell the judge, listen, I have an alternative theory on his injury here.
Yeah.
Maybe people are not voting for him, and that's causing his injury, and that's a self-inflicted wound.
Yeah, and I'm sure there are probably other places where a Democrat lost in the late counting, so it just seems really bizarre that you would want to have all the votes counted. But anyway, I know you've got a veterans group that's joined you and a seniors group that I saw on your site. So it looks like you're not certainly not the only one concerned about this very important voting rights issue.
Right.
Moving on, I'm wondering how concerned you are about threats to our democracy that so many Americans have been speaking out about right now, with a president who's basically been defying courts and doing a lot of things that courts have already found to be illegal. What might you do if you were in Congress, especially if there were a Democratic majority, that's different than how ISA has handled the situation and the Republican majority back there?
Great. So the first thing I need to address here is the affirmative actions that ISA is taking to give Trump cover for, you know, eroding these rights. ISA has sponsored a bill before Congress. I think they're due to vote on it in the House today, called the No Rogue Rulings Act. And he characterizes it as, you know, we're stopping judges from giving relief to people that are not before them. Okay. And it's interesting because I have a unique perspective on this, because I've won injunctive relief against the Trump administration before. I've won injunctive relief against the Biden administration too. And
very interesting.
In both in the immigration context and in both situations, we were on the right side of the issue. Okay. And the idea that, you know, a federal judge shouldn't be allowed to right the wrongs that the government does just because the plaintiffs couldn't afford to go to court or couldn't show up in that venue.
What does the ISA bill do exactly? I know that it's basically going after judges who've made rulings that Trump doesn't like, but specifically, what would it do if it passed?
Well, right now, federal judges do have great power.
Yes.
If they see something that's unlawful or unconstitutional, they can do something called a nationwide injunction.
So this would stop nationwide injunctions? They could only stop it in their own specific district?
I'm glad you asked this, because it gets to like the problem with his reasoning. He doesn't think district court judges should really have that power. He thinks it should be in the hands of higher courts. I think he's probably okay with the circuit courts or the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
But the thing is, those courts do not have capacity for the amount
right.
of
And it takes years.
Controversies.
Years. So if you're talking about, say, illegally deporting immigrants without due process.
Right.
If he had his way, this would go on for years before there
It
could
would
be
go
any
on for years and there
redress.
would be no redress at all.
Yeah,
we're
or
already
anything
seeing
else.
there's no redress.
Yeah, and not just immigrant issues. Obviously, it's anything. Let's talk about immigration specifically. This administration has been pushing mass deportation of immigrants. They're talking about taking away rights of even certain green card holders and others. We've seen, as we alluded to, even the deportation of people to an infamous prison in El Salvador with all kinds of human rights violations. So let's talk about immigration and due process. Tell me about what your biggest concerns are here and anything you've learned from your own practice, maybe the people that you're representing right now, and how your views on this differ from your opponents.
When I was younger, when I was in college, I studied the Holocaust, and I read Primal Levi and Hannah Arendt, and I know that like totalitarianism and authoritarianism does not happen on a Tuesday. The way it happens is a gradual process where they take away one right a day, and they get away with that one, they take the next one away. And so I do see serious threats to the democracy right now. And the due process thing is overwhelming for me. The idea that the president even asserted the right to like disappear people without due process.
Yeah, it's basically kidnapping. If they're not allowed their due process, I think the term deportation is a bit misleading there in some of these cases. In the cases where there hasn't been any court finding that someone's eligible for deportation, you just say,
Right.
you have a tattoo. We think you must be a gang member, and therefore we're going to send you off to a prison that you can never get out of in another country. And now they're saying even if they make a mistake, they can't get them back.
Right. And you're exactly right about the term, too. Deportation is sort of like the common street term for what in law we call removal. And these terms mean going through a process, and there's no process with what's happening. So it is totally disappearing. But the Supreme Court case that was decided yesterday, it's a little confusing if someone's in an echo chamber, because the Democrats say they won, Republicans say they won, and really it was a lose for both, a win for both, I guess.
For those that may not be familiar with this, can you fill us in on what the Supreme Court just did? I should state we're doing this interview on April 8th. So when we say yesterday, this was an April 7th Supreme Court decision.
Right. So the Supreme Court says that Trump can continue using the 1798 law.
The Alien Whatever It Was Act.
Alien Whatever Act. Yeah. He can continue using that to remove people. However, he has to give them due process now. So that basically is going to stop in the tracks what he's doing, because many, if not the majority of the people that he already removed, already disappeared, would not have survived. That would not have happened.
So it may stop it going forward if he obeys the Supreme Court. A whole different issue if he doesn't, then we have a real constitutional crisis. What about the people who've already been sent to that prison? Did the Supreme Court decision address those folks at all? Or does he have to bring them back?
The Supreme Court did not address those folks. And there seems to be a lot of people just like saying, oh, well, what are we going to do? And the way I look at it, when Democrats get back control, we really have to right these wrongs. And we can do it. We're the country that put man on the moon. We can accomplish great things.
Yeah.
And we cannot be bullied by this little country that we're paying, with them telling us, oh, you can't have somebody back. That's not going to happen.
So you would think all you have to do is withhold a payment. If we can get terrorists, if we can get people back from Hamas, we should be able to get people back from a prison in El Salvador. What are your concerns, by the way, regarding the Department of Government Efficiency, or DOGE, led by Elon Musk, that has been doing these just mass firings and even completely eliminating, the Department of USAID? They're trying to eliminate the Department of Education, agencies that were approved by Congress, so it's supposed to take congressional approval to get rid of these, and also just the mass firings and mass deleting of information off of all kinds of different government websites, from healthcare to history to you name it, to DEI things. Can you speak to the whole DOGE issue and what you're most concerned about there?
Right. So first, the whole thing is unlawful. I mean, Congress didn't set it up. You can't just set up an agency. The executive doesn't have that power. But even if the executive did have that power, I have a serious issue with it, because there's already accountability structures in law. There's Office of Inspector Generals. Every big government agency has an Office of Inspector General, although now I think some of them are probably being closed. And I'm one of these nerds that on a Saturday night, I actually would go to the State Department's website and read their audits of embassies and different departments to find out, what are they doing right? What are they doing wrong? And sometimes it's funny. Sometimes it's interesting. You know, there's like in the old days, they said, oh, they were spending $100 on a hammer or something. You know, I remember last year finding that there was this one embassy where all the consular officers kept wrecking cars. And I thought that, well, that's interesting, you know. And so they were trying to figure out like how they could stop this huge expense from this embassy, from like all the foreign service officers having car crashes. So it can be entertaining. But anyway, there are auditors, and they're trained auditors, and many of them are attorneys, and this is their job. They're not a bunch of teenagers in a van that just show up with Red Bull.
Yeah, and these kids that he has doing this, I call them kids, young men in their 20s, 20s or 30s, who have absolutely no background in the agency, don't even know probably what a lot of these things are, that they're just red penciling and deleting. You would think that if you're going to look for waste, fraud, and abuse, you should do a more calculated analysis to actually find it and not just cut everything, getting rid of the good and the bad. Let's talk about some of the social issues, healthcare, women's health in particular. I know you've said that protecting health care and women's health is important to you. Can you speak to that briefly?
Gosh, I long for the days when in the progressive circles, the narrative in the conversation we were having is like, the Affordable Care Act, it's great. Should we take it further? Should we do single payer, Medicare for all? And now The conversation is more like, how do we keep Medicare for people that are dying? How do we stop them from cutting off Medicaid and Social Security?
That's a big concern.
Yeah.
And they're make talking about making it harder. They want to make it so that if you're applying for the first time, you have to go into a Social Security office. You can't just do this by phone
Yeah.
anymore.
Right. And I have some experience with this situation. The Trump administration did this with a division of the State Department called the Kentucky Consular Center, where they decided to not answer the phone anymore. It was like it was and I did a Freedom of Information Act request about that and got all the back memos back and forth. We're like, and basically they're like, we'll blame it on COVID and then let's just see how long we can do it. And that's still in effect today. 5 years later, a very integral part of immigration process for many people, they do, if they call the phone number is not answered. Okay. That's just the way they do it. And then if you send
That's
an
crazy.
email, they did a cable that said, let auto reply do the work. And so basically people get templates. And I see
It's
this
just
ha this is gonna
insane.
what's gonna happen with Social Security. You're not going to be able to talk to a human because there will not be a human there.
It's frightening, especially when you consider how many seniors might be vision challenged or hearing challenged, where they really need that, that one-on-one
Agreed.
touch. Let's move on and talk about the economy. Donald Trump ran on a policy of, hey, we're going to get rid of inflation, right? And instead, he's imposed all these tariffs around the world that are fueling inflation, actually raising the prices of all sorts of things, with the idea, of course, in all fairness, of trying to bring back jobs. I wondered what your thoughts are on tariffs and the economy and inflation. And do you know where Darrell Issa stands on any of those things?
Great questions. Okay. So I got two things I want to talk about on the economy first, tariffs, and also I want to go back into immigration for a second. But with respect to tariffs, Darrell Issa, that's the one place where he's not been a cheerleader, but he's not standing up to Trump and saying that they're wrong. And I have a theory on that. There's a billionaire class. He's not a billionaire, but he's close, I guess.
For many years, he was called the richest man in Congress, may still be.
I don't think he is anymore, and I think it bothers him. But anyway,
Close.
there's this circle of people that get a heads up on what's going to happen with the government, and they make their moves in the market before you can make your personal moves and your 401k or your pension fund can make their moves. And so this tariff thing is fluctuating the market up and down. And every time it does it, you've got people in that class, like Darrell Issa, getting a heads up. And what they're doing is they're buying low and they're selling high over and over. And this wealth, where it's being transferred from, is our pension funds and our 401ks, you know? And so I don't even think, maybe I'm wrong, I don't even think Trump believes in this tariff thing. I think the whole thing is just grift. It's a scam to transfer wealth from everyday people to billionaires. But I definitely think that tariffs are bad for the economy. It's just a ridiculous idea. I'm actually in Mexico visiting family and speaking at a conference this week, and eggs, 18 eggs, $3. So it tells you a little bit about how the world is
They
right
don't
now.
have to be, this high. And other some of it was bird flu and some unrelated, issues
Yeah.
not related to tariffs. But the tariffs are, we've had the Chamber of Commerce speak out the day before he imposed the tariffs, and the building industry head, and they were both saying this was going to be very bad for the San Diego economy, raising the price substantially for home prices, for car prices, and a lot of other things. And then the tariffs that got rolled out were actually even higher and on more countries than they knew about when
Right,
they held that
right,
conference. So it's
right. I mean, the opposite of globalism is what North Korea is experimenting with. And
interesting.
everybody knows that doesn't work, you know?
But Russia was
Yeah.
exempted from the tariffs for unknown reasons. So we can speculate.
Right. Unknown reasons. So the one other thing I want to touch on about the economy is his mass deportation agenda and his war on immigrants. Like right now, they've decided that they're going to, the IRS is going to share information with ICE, which is going to give ICE a new tool to round up people, round up taxpayers. It makes me angry.
Yeah, they're
Is
buying
going
stuff
to
from a lot of these stores and locally, the sales tax.
they're going to
They
undermine
support.
our economy. Carried out mass deportation puts the United States in a very vulnerable place where we do not have food to eat.
Or people to pick it.
Yeah. Who's going to grow the food? And you never hear Trump talk about that. You never hear Daryl Issa talk about who's going to grow the food.
San Diego County has more family farms of 10 acres or less than any other county in America, and nearly all of those are in his district. So you would think he would be more concerned about the impact this is having on farms and farmers. They've also eliminated the program that allowed schools to buy food directly from farms, which is also hurting
Wow.
local
I
farmers.
had no idea.
Yeah, that just happened. Yeah, and food banks. So
That's awful.
this president has pulled the U.S. out of the Paris Climate Accord and has eliminated all sorts of green energy programs that the Biden administration had put in to address climate change. I believe Daryl Issa is on board with that. Can you talk a little bit about the differences between you and your opponent on climate change and sustainability?
Yes, I would be happy to talk about that. Climate change is an issue that is very important to me. I believe that future generations have a right to a stable climate and that we have a duty and an obligation living in this time not to undermine their rights by filling the atmosphere with carbon. I work for a nonprofit right out of law school in Oregon, focused on representing youth plaintiffs against the U.S. government for what the U.S. government has done to actually cause climate change. People actually talk, they say, we need climate action now. And I'm like, you know, the funny thing is, there is a lot of climate action by the government. The government's actually like permitting fossil fuel extraction and licensing it.
Which Trump wants to ramp up, including going back to offshore drilling off of California, even places like Santa Barbara that had one of the worst oil spills ever.
Right. Drill, baby, drill. Yeah. Funny you mentioned the offshore drilling because I wrote a law review article about 10 years ago about how Congress needs to establish a fracking waste regulatory commission. Because right now, when they drill, they use fracking. And basically what comes back up is poison. And on the ground, on the mainland, they move it around in trucks from one place to the other and hope it evaporates and have all these little tricky things to pretend like it goes away. In the ocean, if you see an oil derrick from like a beach and it's out there, when that comes up, they just pump it in the ocean in the same beach water that you're swimming in.
Oh my gosh.
And they're carcinogens. So, and basically no progress has been made. These big oil companies are allowed to self-police themselves, and it's not working. And history will say, oh my gosh.
And at the same time, he's taken away all of the incentives for things like investment in solar, in wind energy, in geothermal, in anything else that would be more sustainable. The Trump administration has also taken aim at diversity, equity, and inclusion, or DEI, including recognition and protections for women, minorities, and the LGBTQ community. Can you comment on that, please? And again, how you might differ on these issues from Daryl Issa?
Oh, where to start? Okay. So the whole thing about DEI is, as I understand it, is white men have had this privilege and they have got used to it. And now all of a sudden people are calling that privilege into question. And so it seems like a desperate, like last attempt to hang on to that privilege to say, oh yeah, you want to take away my privilege. Watch this. I'm going to like take away all your tools to do that. To me, it's just sad. I was raised by a single mom and she experienced workplace discrimination. I'm gay. So of course I've seen discrimination in my life as well. I've been around people when I was in real estate. I saw people discriminating against people because of their race, against one of my realtors one time because of their race, and immigration, and I see it all the time too. So, I am very cognizant and aware that we are in a world where we have work to do if we want to eradicate racism and classism and sexism, and pretending like it doesn't exist it's not viable.
Let's move on and talk about foreign policy for a bit. We've covered, I think, most of the major domestic issues right now. What would your priorities be for foreign policy, including in hotspots such as Gaza and Ukraine?
Big question here. Okay, so the first thing I would say is restoring this thing called diplomacy. Mm-hmm. It was sort of abandoned during the first Trump administration. And for all his strengths and weaknesses, I would say that Secretary Blinken did not do a good job restoring what was taken away there. And we are no longer an actor on the international stage that uses diplomacy to solve problems. We've gone back to just, you know, brute force, or just say, it's ours, we do what we want, you know? And
so you mean taking over Greenland and Panama?
Like, I want it. That song where she's like, I want it, I got it, it's mine. It feels like that. And I think that fuels resentment abroad. It makes enemies. Mm-hmm. Like, there's a little kid right now, 2-year-old, who's surviving in Gaza, and his whole family's probably not surviving. That kid is not going to grow up to think that the U.S. is great when he knows that the U.S. helped finance the destruction of his community, his country, and his family. And so I think that we have external consequences to our foreign policy, and they're not being taken into account.
Yeah. Can you comment specifically on the Gaza-Israel situation, which is such a divisive war? But do you have thoughts on that? Is there a resolution? What, if anything, would you do differently than what President Biden or President Trump has attempted to do thus far on that?
Right. So I realize this puts me left of the current elected party, but I think that Biden could have held Netanyahu and Israel to higher standards mm-hmm. in the implementation of dealing with Hamas. I don't think it was necessary for them to level Gaza. And I do believe it was a genocide.
What would you say to those who are also concerned about the families, the 1,300 people that died in Israel from the Hamas attack? I mean, how do you stop that? Should the Palestinian people be calling for new leadership as well? Certainly a lot of people have called for, you know, a change in Israeli leadership. But what about Hamas? I mean, as long as Hamas is still there, can't this happen again?
It was a horrible tragedy. As I understand what's happening in Gaza right now, I wouldn't even call Hamas leadership. Mm-hmm. I mean, they've taken away the infrastructure of what a community is. If there's no schools or hospitals, there's no town halls, there's no elections. I would say the response to what happened, it was so disproportional that it's going to do Israel more harm in the long run. Not only with how people feel about Israel, but all those kids, man, they're going to grow up and they're going to want revenge. And it's not, it's natural.
It's fueling more terrorism in the end. As far as Ukraine, the free world has largely stood with Ukraine against the unprovoked invasion by Russia. And yet, President Trump has over and over sided with President Putin and Russia. Where do you stand on that?
Yeah, I believe Putin and Russia are the aggressor. And if you let him have Ukraine, he's not going to stop there. He wants to put the old USSR back together. And as long as he's going to use his last breath to do it. And we should not give an inch.
So you would stand with the U.S. rejoining NATO, for example. Not that the decision is up to you, but, you know,
correct.
Congress, I suppose, could take some actions on some of these things in theory.
Right. And what's interesting is Daryl Issa used to care a lot about foreign policy and peace in the Middle East. I did a little bit of research before I joined the race, mm-hmm. and I was like, wow, he used to like want to solve the Middle East peace, you know? But as you see Trump completely making a mess of it, he's silent.
Yeah, it seems like they're all afraid to speak out against Trump for some reason. San Diego is a huge military town with a lot of active duty military personnel and their families here, as well as a lot of veterans. And yet ISA has been oddly silent, as far as I know, about the deep cuts that Trump and DOGE are making to things like veterans affairs. Can you address that, please?
Yeah, it's a huge issue in this district. At the empty seat town hall that was held in Escondido, mm-hmm. it ended up taking, I thought, a surprising amount of the agenda was spent on that, because that's what the people in the room, they were questions about. And mm-hmm. there's a lot of people in our district that served abroad and have PTSD and stuff, and they need services. And the idea that those services are being torn away. I mean, I was not a veteran. Gay, they wouldn't let me serve. But mm-hmm. my grandfathers were, and both of them died in VA hospitals. And I spent a lot of time in VA hospitals growing up, and I've always thought that that was kind of like a really noble, great thing about our country, that we take care of veterans for the long haul.
Yes, we
And that
should.
idea that that we would back off from that. It's like one of the things we do right. We shouldn't give in on it.
Yeah. Listeners, if you've just tuned in, we've been speaking with Curtis Morrison, who is a Democratic candidate running in the 48th Congressional District against Republican incumbent Congressman Darrell Issa. Curtis, I just want to ask you the open-ended question of what else would you like our audience to know that I may not have specifically asked you about today?
Well, I would say, like, my experience as an immigration attorney has been really eye-opening, because I know why people want to come to this country. I understand what they think the American dream is. And I'm sometimes put in the awkward position of explaining to them, people abroad who see us as this shining city, that we're not quite there yet, and that we have a lot of work to do, not only for immigrant families, but for, like, families that have been here for a long time. They're not seeing the American dream either. And I think that my big message is, we have a lot of work to do in Washington to make this the kind of country that we need to be. And it's not make America great again. It's like, let's just keep on the path of getting to the greatness, not going back to something that wasn't necessarily great.
Yeah, helping the middle class and those who are not the billionaires or the oligarchs.
Right. And I would go one step forward and actually, go back to RFK and acknowledge the fact that we have to take care of the poor. I mean, we have a lot of homeless in San Diego County, and we need solutions for that, too.
Curtis, where can people go if they want to get more information about your candidacy or get involved in your campaign?
Thank you. I've set up a website, curtisforcongress.com. It is fully functioning now with Act Blue, so we can accept contributions. And although we would never be able to out-fundraise Darrell Issa, especially now he's got this liaison with Elon Musk.
Is Elon Musk directly supporting Darrell Issa right now?
Darrell Issa is saying nice things about him in tweets. And so Elon Musk is coming underneath him with the little American flag. And so, I don't know, they're flirting on Twitter about that. So I'm sure
okay.
money will pour in if Darrell Issa needs it, right?
Okay,
so what I'm saying is, we do need to raise money. And I will be on the phone raising money, both from inside the district and outside the district, because we need to get the message out. I don't need to raise $400 million or anything, which, who knows, he might end up doing that and spending it. But we need to raise enough money to where people understand there is an option to this Darrell Issa thing.
There you go. Well, we are out of time, but I want to thank you very much for taking the time to join us today. Curtis Morrison, candidate for Congress, on the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ, the network for social justice.